Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. This is very exciting if you happen to have a cat. You ought to know, if you don't, about the Win Feline Foundation that just rebranded, I think that's the terminology, to the Every Cat Health Foundation, doing the same thing they've been doing for over 50 years. If you have a cat, if you know a cat, if you've ever seen a cat, that cat has been, everything about that cat is known because of funding over decade after decade after decade from what was the Win Feline Foundation, now the Every Cat Health Foundation, including problems like inflammatory bowel disease. What do you do about that with cats? Well, we'll talk with Dr. Brian Hollab about that. If you have a cat, I know it's early in the morning to talk about inflammatory bowel disease. What's he saying? I just got up and he's saying inflammatory bowel disease in cats. Well, if your cat is impacted, and it does affect a lot of cats, you will want to hear that conversation with Dr. Brian Hollab. Justin Witte is the curator of the Cleve Kearney Museum of Art at the College of DuPage. I am talking to Justin about an exhibit called Frida Kahlo Timeless. It's all about Frida Kahlo. But why would we do that on a pet show? We'll get there. We'll get there, Justin. First of all, hello, and tell me briefly about what this exhibit is, because it's kind of astounding.
Yeah, so it's an exhibit of 26 original works by Frida Kahlo, as well as an extensive historical timeline with over 100 photographs from her life. We have a large garden that was created based on her garden at the Blue House. So it's a really immersive, amazing exhibit, especially to have at our museum at the College of DuPage.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, okay. You beg the question, I'll ask. So I've been to the, I'm very lucky, I'm very privileged. I've been to Mexico City where I've been to the Frida Kahlo Museum or something like that, I think it's called. And it's, in, of course, it has all her works of art. How does it end up at the College of DuPage in Glen Ellen?
Well, it's through a personal connection. We have a longtime donor to the college who was a personal friend with the director of the Dolores Olmedo Museum. And they have the largest collection of Kahlo works in the world. And it was through their relationship that we were able to have this opportunity and to share this work.
Yeah, that's very cool. Now, explain why you're on the pet show. Frida Kahlo, by the way, let's do sort of a basic 101, because some people may not know. I think she is the most well-known artist in Mexico today, one of the most well-known in America. I have a Sunday afternoon show on WGN, and I mentioned that to you, and you said, no, she is the most well-known artist on the planet now?
Google actually released information that she's the second most Googled artist in the world.
Wow.
Behind Michelangelo.
Wow.
I think that's because Michelangelo had some family members voting.
Well, you certainly are a Chicagoan at heart. So Frida Kahlo is a very famous artist. She is from Mexico. Still, why the pet show? Tell me.
Well, you know, at her house in the south of Mexico, known as the Blue House now, she actually had a wide range of pets. You know, she had pet spider monkeys, two of them. She had a parrot, deer. She had a pet eagle named Gertrudis Cacablanca. I'll let you translate that. She had parakeets, macaws, hens, sparrows, and also xolo dogs, xolus cuenle dogs, which are those Mexican hairless dogs.
Mm-hmm.
So it was almost like a zoo that she had. And not only that, but she featured the animals in her paintings quite a bit, especially the spider monkeys. You might, when you think of her work, you may recognize these. Spider monkeys have very long, elegant arms and hands and long tails, and a lot of her paintings, they're seen on her shoulder or kind of caressing her or around her. So they showed up in her work a lot, as well did her her parrot and also her dogs.
Now
there's symbolism between that as well.
That's exactly what I was going to ask you about. I'm going to ask you to play armchair psychiatrist here. So Frida Kahlo had a very difficult life, really. Do you think that that had anything to do with her apparent special connection to a wide variety of animals?
Absolutely. You know, she struggled throughout her life with having children, something that was hard for her because of an accident she had at age 18. And a lot of these animals she felt like they were her family, they were her children, and she used them as symbols in her paintings for people and things that she was close to. In fact, in a lot of her later self-portraits, you would see up to four of spider monkeys in the paintings, and a lot of people think those represented her students, particularly a very close group of students that she taught at the La Esmeralda School, who called themselves Los Fritos, who were so attached and loyal to Frida that they even continued to take painting lessons from her at her house after she was too ill to teach at the school. So she used them as symbols not only for the people she loved, like those students, but also reaching to like the pre-Columbian and kind of Aztec symbolism of the creature. So the monkey is a symbol of life and lust and the arts, and that often appeared in her work as well as this symbol of her vivaciousness and her life.
Yeah, and you know, when I think of Frida Kahlo, now that you mention all this, I can imagine in my mind's eye, for example, some of the paintings with spider monkeys that you're talking about. But I can also picture people in Mexico walking around with purses that have images of Frida Kahlo. It's a copy of that painting essentially on a purse. Or for that matter, a coffee mug, you know? Would she have ever thought, do you think, that this would happen, that she would be far more famous? I mean, she was somewhat well-known in Mexico. Her partner on and off, Diego Rivera, I think was even more well-known, that all these years later, the best thing that could happen to her name is that she would die and become far more famous.
Well, I think that's, you know, a curse a lot of artists have. And for sure, in her lifetime, I think her husband, Diego, was probably more famous. But now, yeah, there is this Frida mania all over the world, and you see her face all over all sorts of merchandise. And I think no one could say, you know, how she would feel. I'm not sure how she would feel about all of that being turned into consumer merchandise. But at the same time, Frida throughout her life was very aware of how to use her image. She grew up in her father's photographic studio and kind of understood the power of the photographic image early on, and was always surrounded throughout her life by some of the best photographers of the 20th century, which is why we have so many of those great images of her, photographs of her. So I think she would also understand the power of that image and that ultimately it was helping to bring people to her work. Because it's in that work where some of the symbolism we already talked about, but also the story of her life, which, like you said, at times was very difficult, and she spoke about in an honest way, comes out in the work. So I think there's also understanding that all of that merchandise is really a symbolism of the connection people have to her, and she would appreciate that aspect of it.
All right, so where can folks see Frida Kahlo, timeless, an appropriate name, I think, and where can you go there and kind of monkey around and do the things you talk about?
Well, our exhibit is up through September 6th at the Cleve Kearney Museum of Art and the Mackenich Art Center at the College of DuPage. And you can find out more information at frida2021.org. And that's also where you can buy tickets. There's two types of tickets. There's time tickets, where you go on a specific day and time. Those tickets are $23. And then there are untimed tickets, where you can go at any point during the day, and those are $40. There's also information on groups and other activities and events that's happening at the museum during this exhibition. That's at frida2021.org.
Perfect. Well done. And I suppose that no monkeys, however, are allowed.
No monkeys are allowed. That's correct.
All right. Justin Witte, thank you so very much.
All right. Thank you, Steve.
Dr. Brian Holub is the chief medical officer at VetCor. They have veterinary practices all over America. He's also on the board of directors of the Every Cat Health Foundation, previously known as the WIN Feline Foundation, a longtime scientific advisor to both what is now Every Cat Health Foundation as well as the Canine Health Foundation. In fact, if your dog or cat is healthy, thank this guy, Dr. Brian Holub. It's always good to talk to you, sir. And I want to talk about the difference that the WIN Feline Foundation, nonprofit funding cat health studies, has made, because you've been involved for decades, has made over the years. Now it's called the Every Cat Health Foundation.
Absolutely. Every Cat Health Foundation has touched the lives of virtually any cat who has ever been sick, from the mild to the very severe, and has been revolutionary and evolutionary in advancing the science, which has helped us learn and now be able to treat many diseases that in the past might have been considered untreatable.
Yeah, very, very well put. And one of those diseases that we now understand more about, in part because of the funding from the Every Cat Health Foundation, is what's called IBD, or inflammatory bowel disease, in cats. People get this too. So some folks might be familiar, but what is IBD in cats?
Well, IBD is a disorder of the gastrointestinal system, of the stomach, or the small intestine, or the large intestine, called the colon. And it is the parallel disease group that we see in humans that would be called Crohn's disease, mm-hmm. or ulcerative colitis, or Crohn's colitis. And it is a disease that's not an infection. It's a disease that's not a cancer. It's a disease that is rooted in inflammation. And the inflammation can be so severe as to be life-threatening.
What are some signs that cat parents should look for?
So there are three big symptoms. And these symptoms can be in many diseases. And some of the diseases that cause these symptoms can be mild. But the three symptoms we always watch for are inappetence / weight loss. So inappetence. Second one would be vomiting. And the third one would be diarrhea. And it's a building block diagnosis. You only need one of those for us to start thinking about it. If two of those show up, boy, it becomes more convincing. And if we see all three, we're even more convinced. But even all three can be a group of other diseases. So we need to carefully work through the diagnostic pathway.
And the most important question is, well, in part due to funding from the Every Cat Health Foundation, what can be done about it? Is it like, oh no, my cat's going to have diarrhea forever?
Well, Every Cat Health Foundation has been instrumental in funding research to let us understand this process. From 30 years ago, identifying a whole new set of inflammatory modulators, we now call leukotrienes. Those were discovered through research funded by the Wynn Foundation, all the way through how to diagnose and better diagnose and differentiate inflammatory bowel disease from cancer. Mm-hmm. And without that lion's share of research, we would be crippled in our ability to diagnose this disease. And diagnosis starts with blood tests, fecal examinations, and x-rays and ultrasounds, and ultimately progresses in our most severe cases to endoscopy, intestinal biopsies, and even occasionally full-thickness biopsies with laparoscopic or exploratory surgery.
So can anything be done? So let's say, you know, my cat's been diagnosed with this, then now what? What is treatment?
So treatment can be highly successful, particularly the earlier the diagnosis is made. Treatment usually revolves around decreasing the inflammation. And some revolutionary research, also funded through the Every Cat Health Foundation, has shown us that early intervention and the use of diet change and probiotics can be very helpful in curbing the progression of disease. But if that escapes us, we usually move into medications that suppress the immune system. From simple medicines like prednisolone, which is cortisone, to less invasive medicines like metronidazole, mm-hmm. to more invasive medicines, for inflammatory bowel disease than cortisone. We match the treatment to the severity of the disease and actually to the biopsies
because this disease can progress to cancer. And if we are detecting the disease closer to that leap to cancer, we become more aggressive. And so we may use not only prednisolone or cortisone, we may add to that other medicines like Imuran, azathioprine, and other medicines to try to curtail the inflammation and stop the symptoms. And once controlled, we can back off of some of the more severe medicines until we can get a nice, controlled, comfortable cat that may very well and should live out their normal lifespan.
And, you know, and have a good quality of life as well. And even if it does transform into cancer, there are two possibilities. That's the small cell lymphoma or the large cell. And you don't want the large cell, but if it's the small cell, that can be treated and is often treated. I have a cat with one of those for many years without impacting quality of life at all.
Yeah, and sometimes the treatment of the small cell cancer can be a once-a-week pill that's given at home that can, in some cases, control that cancer with the highest quality of life. So even if it makes the leap to cancer, it still presents opportunities for successful treatment.
So all of these years, for many years, you can tell me how many years, you've been a scientific advisor to what's called now the Every Cat Health Foundation. What has impressed you more than anything else, and why stick with it as a volunteer for what is decades?
Well, the Healthy Cat Foundation has one vision, and they stay focused on that vision, does not get distracted, and has been a leader in our industry in this area, and that is to science. Focused on science, focused on advancing science with a very clear objective of improving the quality of life and the length of life for cats.
Well,
it's
put.
It's simple,
yep.
It's focused, and it's just essential to my industry, my veterinary industry, that we keep advancing our ability to understand, diagnose, and treat these horrible diseases.
Well, behind the scenes, my friend, I happen to know how instrumental you've been. Everycat.org to learn more. Dr. Brian Holub, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
What year was it that the dog flu hit this community? So there are two strains of dog flu, and one of them goes back, I think, I'm not very good with years, I think it was 2008, and that happened in Florida. That's H3N8. And then H3N2, a dog enters Chicago from Southeast Asia somehow, somewhere. We still don't know. That happened later. I think that was 2013, 15, 2015 maybe. In any which case, here's what I do know for sure. Thousands and thousands of dogs, some of your dogs, became very ill because of this novel flu that still, even today, if a dog that is unvaccinated is exposed to the flu, that dog is going to get either strain, it doesn't matter, of dog flu, for sure. Now, some of the dogs don't get sick, but they all then are responsible for spreading the disease to other dogs who are unvaccinated. And you're thinking, well, I haven't heard a lot about the dog flu. Well, it is still here. For example, in Florida. And this is what happens when you don't vaccinate in general. We've seen it with distemper, canine distemper, for years and years. When you don't vaccinate, there's canine distemper that pops up. Well, in Florida, the dog flu just out of nowhere seemingly popped up. And in a big way, at a rescue called the Big Dog Rescue, that is a marvelous dog rescue. A dog on intake happened to have the flu. Wasn't symptomatic at that point in time, but became quickly so. But by then, you had dozens of dogs that were sick. And in total, 50 to 60 dogs became sick with dog flu, some of them quite seriously. Vaccination, that's what you do. Pair up for protection. So your dog is not only, and probably is right now, protected against what we call kennel cough, which is actually a variety of different issues that you don't want your dog to get. But dog flu is actually more serious. And you don't at all want your dog to get both of these. So ask your veterinarian about pairing up for protection so your dog is protected against both dog flu as well as Bordetella or kennel cough. One more thing. I'll be back next week, bright and early. Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN.